The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
In advance of the American holiday of Thanksgiving, and since we won't be open next Thursday, I thought I'd talk a little bit about appreciation, especially as it applies to our practice. I think a lot of times in our meditation practice in particular, the focus can be around, you know, what we're cultivating is this non-reactive, non-judgmental attention, opening to whatever's in our experience. And often what we open to is suffering. We open to pain. We open to emotional reactivity. And a lot of the focus around our meditation can be around the difficulties. And so we can overlook at times that what's also happening while we're attending to these difficulties, while we're bringing our mindful attention to these difficulties, that there's a whole bunch of beautiful, wholesome qualities of mind that are coming along, that are being cultivated at the same time while we're paying attention to the difficulties. There's so many of these qualities that are cultivated while we practice. And I'm just going to name some of them. I'm not going to describe them in much in detail because I'm going to pick a few. I'm going to pick a few to go into tonight. But I'm just going to read some of these. And I'm going to focus this based on various lists that the Buddha gives, because this is the easiest way to remember them. So the list of the five faculties: confidence, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. The list of the seven factors of awakening. And there's going to be overlap in these lists. The list of the seven factors of awakening: mindfulness, investigation, energy, joy, tranquility, concentration, equanimity. And then the list of 10 perfections, it's the 10 paramis, qualities that are cultivated as we practice. Generosity, ethical conduct or virtue, renunciation, wisdom, energy, patience, truthfulness, determination, kindness, and equanimity. Then there's another list, and this is the list I'd like to talk about today. This is the list of the four, sometimes called the divine abidings, the four. They're four very beautiful qualities of heart that I kind of like to think about them as kind of an emotional map of the heart as it lets go. Kind of the emotional tone of the heart that's not contracted. Kindness, compassion, what we could call sympathetic or empathetic joy, and equanimity. So it's really helpful as we explore our minds, as we pay attention to our experience, to notice when these qualities are coming up. Appreciating these qualities, appreciating when they arise, helps to give them nourishment, helps to support their cultivation. So I'd like to talk about, in particular, these four qualities, these four divine abidings of kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. And I'll give you the Pali for these, because I will probably slip into using the Pali, so I want to have put it out there. So the Pali word for kindness or loving kindness is metta. You may have heard that term, metta. Then the Pali term for compassion is karuna. The Pali term for sympathetic joy is mudita. And the Pali term for equanimity is upeka. So the first three of these, kindness, compassion, and sympathetic joy, are kind of all based out of this quality of an open heart, which is the quality of kindness itself, the quality of metta itself, is just this heart that is open and not contracted. Kind of the non-resistant heart has this quality of metta, of kindness. And the other two, compassion and sympathetic joy, are related to this. So I'd like to start by describing this first one, this quality of metta. It does feel like this open, soft heart, that there's no sense of holding anyone or anything out of the heart, no sense of resistance or rejection of anything, of anyone or any experience. So this open-heartedness has a feeling, it feels the open-heartedness, this, I do this gesture, that's the way it feels to me. It also has this quality of connecting us to others and to our experience. We can have this sense of kindness to our experience as well as kindness to other beings. So it's got this quality of being open and soft as well as connected. It's unconditional. The quality of this kindness that we're exploring in the mind, in the heart, that the Buddha points to with this open-heartedness, doesn't need anything in return. It's not this kind of exchange kind of kindness or a sense of exchange. I will like you if you will like me, or I'll do good things for you if you'll do nice things for me. It's really just a flowing out of the sense of connection and open-heartedness without needing anything back. So it's got the sense of feeling, of kindness, of caring, of friendliness. All of these terms could be used for this quality of metta. And it can range. The range of feeling can go just from a simple sense of caring all the way to a kind of a boundless, expansive sense of love for all beings, kind of a radiating, boundless quality. The Buddha describes it that way. And in its full flowering, he describes metta as being abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will. So it kind of evoke this quality, perhaps. Maybe you could get a sense of this quality if you think about what it might feel like. What does it feel like to think about seeing or meeting a dear friend that you haven't seen in a very long time? That quality of joy, of happiness, of sense of well-wishing when you meet this person, this just sense of the heart opening and connecting as this person comes to see you. So this quality connects us with others in this way, this open-hearted quality, has a natural way of, you know, when the heart is not resistant, it's like naturally connecting outwards. But it also connects us to ourselves. Connects us to the wish for kindness, the wish for safety, the wish for happiness of ourselves. The Buddha said, searching in all directions with one awareness, one finds no one dearer than oneself. And this was not he didn't put this down. He actually said, this is healthy. And I think in our own culture, this is an area where sometimes we're we at least sometimes in this culture have a tendency to have a sense of not appreciating ourselves, a sense of self-hatred at times. I know that I've experienced that. And so for me, it was easier to have a sense of connecting with others than it was having a sense of connecting with myself. So this is an area of exploration for us to see, can we open this quality of open-heartedness to ourselves as well? I'm going to read you some descriptions of this quality from Nyanaponika Thera. He is a German monk who had a beautiful way of writing. He was just an amazing writer, and so I find this to be kind of poetic, the way he describes this quality. Love without selecting and excluding, knowing well that to do so means to create love's own contrasts, like dislike, aversion, and hatred. That's love without selecting and excluding. Love embracing impartially all sentient beings, and not only those who are useful, pleasing, or amusing to us. Love embracing all beings, be they noble-minded or low-minded, good or evil. The noble and the good are embraced because love is flowing to them spontaneously. The low-minded and evil are included because they are the ones who are most in need of love. In many of them, the seed of goodness may have died merely because warmth was lacking for its growth, because it perished from cold in a loveless world. Love, but not the sensuous fire that burns, scorches, and tortures, that inflicts more wounds than it cures, flaring up now at the next moment being extinguished, leaving behind more coldness and loneliness than was felt before. Rather, love that lies like a soft but firm hand on the ailing beings, ever unchanged in its sympathy, without wavering, unconcerned with any response it meets. Love that is a sublime nobility of heart and intellect which knows, understands, and is ready to help. Love that is strength and gives strength. This is the highest love. So the first three, as I said, the first three qualities of the this list are related to this quality of the open heart. Kind of in a simple way of looking at this, this open heart, this soft heart, this non-resistant heart, when it meets a kind of, you know, just a kind of a neutral experience, it's got this sense of connection. It meets a neutral person, somebody that we don't know very well, just a sense of connection and open-heartedness, kindness. When it meets suffering, when this open, soft heart meets suffering, compassion is the response. When this open, soft heart meets success or happiness or good fortune, the response is this sympathetic joy, this sympathetic resonance with that joy. And then these first three are balanced by the fourth, equanimity. Without a balance of mind, it's easy for us to get pulled into a kind of a maybe Hallmark greeting card kind of feeling. I'm not coming up with the word, but sappiness. We get pulled into a kind of a sappiness of love without a balance of mind. We could get overwhelmed by the suffering and move kind of, be swamped by compassion, be swamped by the feelings that are around compassion. Or we could move to kind of an exuberance in meeting joy. So here's what Nyanaponika has to say about equanimity. Equanimity rooted in insight is the guiding and restraining power for love, compassion, and sympathetic joy. It points out to them the direction they have to take and sees to it that this direction is followed. Equanimity guards love and compassion from being dissipated in vain quests and from going astray in the labyrinths of uncontrolled emotion. Equanimity, being a vigilant self-control for the sake of the final goal, does not allow sympathetic joy to rest content with humble results, forgetting the real aims that we have to strive for. So metta, the teachings say that there's causes for metta. That there's what they call proximate causes, near causes for metta. The main one being seeing the good. So now just while I'm talking, see if you can kind of connect with this and see what happens in your heart as you reflect in this way. So thinking about somebody you know well and reflecting on the good qualities of that person, qualities you like about them. Now, your mind may kind of go, if it's a dear friend, your mind may kind of be drawn at times to, well, but they're nice that way, but they did that thing too. See if you can just kind of allow yourself to just connect with, resonate with these good qualities, the beautiful qualities that this person has, and set aside for the moment any other qualities. Think about kind things they've done. And how does your heart feel as you think about kind things that this person has done for you? And we can turn these two reflections on ourselves as well. This one was hard for me when I first tried it. Thinking about qualities you like about yourself. What is it that you appreciate about your own self? Perhaps a willingness to engage with trying to open your heart. It might be as simple as that. What do you appreciate about yourself? And see how does that land in your heart to think about that? And think about kind things that you have done. And how does that land in your heart? Another way into this is to reflect on things you're grateful for. I'm going to read a poem that kind of, I think in a way it evokes this quality of kindness. It's a description of kindness. And how kindness, when we are experiencing this kindness, it transforms our relationship to our experience. It's called St. Francis and the Sow by Galway Kinnell. The bud stands for all things, even those things that don't flower. For everything flowers from within of self-blessing, though sometimes it's necessary to reteach a thing its loveliness. To put a hand on its brow of the flower and retell it in words and in touch, it is lovely, until it flowers again from within of self-blessing. As St. Francis put his hand on the creased forehead of the sow and told her in words and in touch, blessings of earth on the sow, and the sow began remembering all down her thick length, from the earthen snout all the way through the fodder and slops to the spiritual curl of the tail, from the hard spininess spiked out from the spine down through the great broken heart, to the blue milk and dreaminess spurting and shuddering from the 14 teats into the 14 mouths, sucking and blowing beneath them, the long, perfect loveliness of sow. In exploring this quality of this open-heartedness, this connection, some of you may have felt a little bit of this in the kind of exploration and thinking about good qualities or kind actions. You may have felt a little bit of resistance at times. You know, a sense of a little bit of sniggling ill will that comes up when you're thinking about a dear friend. Well, yeah, they're nice that way, but this is the what they call the far enemy of metta. It's a quality that comes up in relation to metta, but is not going to be mistaken for it. So in our exploration of metta, we need to kind of have our heart open to this feeling of ill will, to even have the sense of kindness towards this feeling of ill will. And then there is what we could call the near enemy of metta, which also tends to come up as we are exploring this terrain of this quality of metta, of kindness. And that is a kind of a selfish grasping, a kind of a selfish affection, an affection that needs something in return. So it's close. It's got a similar kind of connectedness, but it's got some conditions on it. So it's not that unconditional kind of quality. I had an experience. At one point, I had fallen in love with somebody, and it was not returned. So it was unrequited love. I felt very strong connection to him. But it was clear. It was just really clear that it was not reciprocated. But we spent a lot of time together. And so I was kind of struggling with my feelings, and it's kind of what I was telling myself was, these feelings aren't appropriate. I shouldn't be feeling this feeling of love for him. And so I kept exploring these feelings and, you know, struggling and feeling the feelings. And at one point in this process, I don't know how long into the time this was, maybe a couple weeks or 3 or 4 weeks or something. And at some point I was reflecting on the feeling of love that I felt for this person. And while I was sitting there feeling that, this thought crossed my mind. It was like, what are you afraid of? And with that thought, there was some kind of resistance that let go. And the heart just opened. It stopped resisting the feeling. And it just opened and had this like outpouring of, oh, I hope that you're happy. Just a kind of the sense of unconditional well-wishing. Very strong sense of, it still had that quality of love, and yet it didn't need anything in return. It was just this one-directional outpouring of love. And what was surprising to me in that experience was that as I was feeling this feeling, the mind kind of said, this is the feeling I've been looking for. In all the relationships that I you know, was looking for some kind of love that had the sense of exchange, of wanting something back, of wanting to be loved, what I found is that the heart that was open and loving, that was the feeling. That was what I had been looking for. Not for somebody else to love me. It was kind of surprising. So this love that doesn't need anything in return, it's a very beautiful quality. So as this heart that opens meets suffering, we have the sense of compassion that arises. When this heart that's non-resistant meets somebody in the world who is aching or lonely or hurting, in pain. The heart that's open and non-resistant will kind of quiver in response to that. It's kind of this, the description of compassion is the quivering of the heart in response to suffering. There's this image to me, this image is like the softness of the heart that vibrates, resonates in response to that suffering. It's a beautiful emotion, even as it acknowledges the suffering. It has a quality, too, of wanting to act, of wanting to do something to support or to help. Compassion has that active quality. So to kind of imagine this or evoke this, you might think about how you might feel if you go into the bedroom of a small child, of a child that you're fond of, and see that child sobbing over a book, having just finished reading Charlotte's Web. Or maybe not quite finished, but just got to the point where Charlotte dies. Just the kind of sense of how your heart understands the suffering. But in this case, because you're an adult, you can probably have the open heart to really just meet that suffering and not be at all resistant. So this would be the near enemy of compassion, is when the heart meets the suffering but has a little bit of resistance to it, a little bit of feeling overwhelmed by that suffering, a sense that this is wrong, this is not right, this should not be happening. Or perhaps sliding in a slightly different direction, a feeling of pity. It's like kind of like a self versus other in this feeling of connecting to the suffering. It's like, well, I really feel for you, but thank goodness it's not me. Where there's still a separation. So the open heart of compassion doesn't feel that separation. I also think that there's a connection to understanding impermanence that supports this quality of compassion. That as we begin to really understand and connect to impermanence, this quality of compassion becomes more available to us. The less we resist our own mortality, the more we acknowledge our own mortality, the more we can connect to this quality of compassion. Here's another quote from a Tibetan teacher. When we finally know that we are dying, and all other sentient beings are dying with us, we start to have a burning, almost heartbreaking sense of the fragility and preciousness of each moment and each being. And from this can grow a deep, clear, limitless compassion for all beings. Another poem that evokes this, and this is a poem I've read before, but I've heard it so many times read to me, and I never get tired of hearing it. So if you've heard it before, hopefully you will also not be tired of hearing it. It's called Kindness, by Naomi Shihab Nye. Before you know what kindness really is, you must lose things. Feel the future dissolve in a moment, like salt in a weakened broth. What you held in your hand, what you counted and carefully saved, all this must go, so you know how desolate the landscape can be between the regions of kindness. How you ride and ride, thinking the bus will never stop. The passengers eating maize and chicken will stare out the window forever. Before you learn the tender gravity of kindness, you must travel where the Indian in a white poncho lies dead by the side of the road. You must see how this could be you, how he too was someone who journeyed through the night with plans and the simple breath that kept him alive. Before you know kindness as the deepest thing inside, you must know sorrow as the other deepest thing. You must wake up with sorrow. You must speak to it till your voice catches the thread of all sorrows and you see the size of the cloth. Then it is only kindness that makes sense anymore. Only kindness that ties your shoes and sends you out into the day to mail letters and purchase bread. Only kindness that raises its head from the crowd of the world to say, "It is I you have been looking for," and then goes with you everywhere like a shadow or a friend. I really love that last line because that was so much my experience. It is I you have been looking for. This is the feeling I think we're all looking for. This feeling of this open-hearted connection with all beings. The cause, the proximate cause of compassion is said to be the sight of someone helpless in a state of distress. So this, if you, and again, just kind of thinking back on the example of it going into the bedroom of the small child, you know, the small child, kind of a helpless being and in distress from reading the story, it evokes this quality. So we will wish to take action, and yet it's helpful to be wise in taking action. And sometimes we can, again, knowing whether we're taking action out of this near enemy of a sense that it's not supposed to be like this, or whether it's a truer, non-resistant response to the suffering. So an example about this. This is a kind of a classic, poignant example of a young boy who saw suffering in the world and tried to do something to help. It's a story of David Brower, an environmentalist, the founder of the John Muir Institute, Friends of the Earth. He tells the story of one of his earliest adventures as a naturalist. At the age of 11, he collected some eggs of the western swallowtail butterfly and kept an eye on them as they hatched into caterpillars, which later turned into chrysalides. Finally, the first of the chrysalids began to crack open, and what Brower saw was this. The emerging butterfly struggled out, its abdomen distended by some sort of fluid that was pumped out over its wings as it hung upside down on a twig. Half an hour later, it was ready to fly, and it took off. As the other chrysalids began to crack, however, Brower decided to make himself useful. He gently eased open the crack to facilitate the butterfly's emergence, and they promptly slid out, walked around, and one by one dropped dead. He had failed to realize that the exertions he had spared the butterflies were essential to their survival because they triggered the flow of the fluid that had to reach their wings. This experience taught him a lesson he was still talking about 70 years later. What appears to be kind and is meant as kind can be the reverse of kind. So we need to take care with our impulse to act to relieve suffering. We need to take care that there's wisdom that understands. And when we make a mistake, we need to learn from the mistake. So in this case, He learned from his mistake. He went on to understand and become a great naturalist, sharing his story. So we need to learn from our experience when we find ourselves making mistakes like this. So the far enemy of compassion is cruelty. When we see suffering, or sometimes it's actually the wish to cause suffering, in a sense. We all feel this. Again, this is not something to try to shut down. In the terrain of this exploration of compassion, we will feel this opposite quality in our hearts, the wish to hurt someone. The more we open our hearts to see what's here, the more we see both the beautiful and the unbeautiful. And resistance to the unbeautiful is not so helpful. Now, acting out of the unbeautiful is not so helpful either. Acting out of cruelty is not so helpful. But resisting it, shoving it down, having aversion to it, essentially being cruel to that feeling, just kind of keeps, it kind of creates a pressure cooker in a way of that feeling. So an open-hearted connection even to our own feelings that run counter to these beautiful qualities. This is actually the way through to meet, to cultivate these qualities. Then when metta meets happiness, good fortune, this quality of the open heart meets good fortune, it responds in kind. The term sympathetic joy, that translation, sympathetic joy, I like that translation because to me it reminds me of the term sympathetic vibration in music, where when you pluck a string, you get some overtones on a nearby string because it vibrates in sympathy. It's a sympathetic vibration. So you get some overtones, some musical overtones that come because of the vibration that's transmitted through the air. So this sympathetic joy is kind of that way, that when the heart is open and it sees joy, it responds with joy. There's no sense of contraction or, oh, I wish it were me, or a sense of, well, there's less for me now. I think these are some of the misconceptions we have about happiness. I know I had this misconception. I kind of somehow felt that happiness was a zero-sum game. That if I were happy, it meant that my dear friends would have less of it. Or if they were happy, it meant that I somehow would have less of it. It doesn't work this way. As my heart got less contracted and more open, I saw that the more happiness there is in the world, the happier I can be. The more happiness there is, the happier this heart can be. So this quality, to kind of connect with this quality, just imagine seeing a toddler on the playground learn how to master something. A friend of mine described her 2-year-old walking on the playground and coming upon a little bump on the playground and walking over it and falling down and getting up. And trying again, over and over again, trying to walk over this little bump on the playground and falling down over and over again. And finally, when she mastered it, the joy, the laughter, the happiness of her mastering this. Even as my friend described this to me, I felt happy. You know, just this, babies and toddlers can be such great mudita teachers for us because we don't seem to resent. I mean, at least I don't have this idea that somehow the happiness of a toddler is taking something away from me. You know, we can connect with their joy and appreciate it. So the near enemy of this quality of sympathetic joy is kind of an exuberance. It's like the energy of that happiness kind of goes a little bit crazy, like gets a little bit excited or something. And again, it kind of has that feeling of, oh, this is the way it's supposed to be. Oh, it's great. It's going to be like this forever. And so there gets to be this kind of exuberant feeling around it. And that has some attachment to it, some sense of needing it to be this way or attaching somehow to it being this way. And then resistance, envy being the far enemy of this quality, resentment or envy. So equanimity is the quality that needs to balance these, that we can get swept away into sentiment or pity or grief or exuberance. Without a balance of mind, these qualities are easily pushed into their near enemy or into their far enemy. So equanimity, this fourth quality, is a balance of mind that can meet without resistance whatever is happening. This is what allows us to open to all the joys, all the sorrows of life. To think back on that example of walking into the room with a small child and seeing them crying over reading Charlotte's Web. In that case, there was a sense of compassion for the suffering of the child, but you might have also touched into this quality of balance of mind. That you understand, there's a greater understanding that you have that creates a sense of balance for you around the suffering. So that's a taste, perhaps, of the quality of equanimity. Very helpful quality to cultivate and to recognize when it's present. This quality of equanimity is a quality that we really work with in our meditation practice. And I think many of you, perhaps all of you, have had moments or times when you've been exploring something, maybe just as simple as a little pain in the knee or an emotion that comes up that you realize, oh, I can be here for this. I don't have to fight this. It's okay for this to be here. That's the flavor of equanimity. So the near enemy of equanimity is what we might call indifference. It's kind of the sense of not caring. You know, so one of my friends came up with a beautiful kind of distinction that I really like to check out for myself when I'm feeling, well, okay, you know, I feel pretty balanced around this. Is the sense I don't care, or is the sense I don't mind this? There's a distinction. I hope you can sense the distinction. I don't care has a little bit of a self-other sense. You can do what you want. I don't care, you know. Or, oh, I don't mind this. The far enemy of equanimity is reactivity, basically. The sense of the mind not being in balance with the way things are. So cultivating these qualities, I think that we cultivate these qualities through in many ways. We cultivate them through our mindfulness practice. We cultivate them through engaging with others in practical ways, and we can cultivate them through explicit practices of meditative practices. I'm not going to go into that tonight. I want to more focus on the qualities themselves and how we can, through our awareness, connect with, resonate with these qualities. So mindfulness itself, the quality of mindfulness, has a sense of meeting whatever is happening. It, in a way, has a flavor of this non-judgmental, non-reactive, non-interfering mind that is in the terrain of these qualities of kindness, of compassion, of sympathetic joy. That heart that is willing to just meet whatever is happening. So awareness can have this quality of kindness in it. And we can see this, I think, when we're willing to be present for someone. We're willing to be present when someone is struggling. For me, I had this a clear demonstration of this at one point when I was with somebody who went into a kind of a memory of something traumatic that had happened to them when they were young. And clearly they were kind of overwhelmed by it. And I didn't know what to do except just be there with them. I tried to be as present as I could, just as present and open to whatever was going on for this person as I could. And at one point, my friend said, "Well, I don't know what to say." I said, "Well, you don't have to say anything. I'm just willing to sit here with you." And my friend said, "Oh, okay." And then kind of broke down. Just having this willingness of somebody to sit there and be with the struggle. And my friend came back to me a few days later and said, "What were you doing?" I said, he asked me then, he knew something about the meditation. He said, "Were you doing metta?" I said, "No, I was just trying to be there. I was just trying to be present." So this is a way I think we can really see how this quality of presence brings along this quality of kindness, of metta. The quality of presence, of willingness to be there, is this open heart. We can bring this quality to our own experience as well. Meeting our own experience with this willingness to just be there with it. Somebody said, and I tried to find out who said this, but I couldn't find it out, meditation is the continual act of befriending oneself. We can think about this quality of attention, careful, kind attention, being like bathing ourselves with kindness and friendliness. So to cultivate this quality, simple mindfulness does cultivate it. Just the willingness to meet experience cultivates, brings along with it the quality of this open heart. So beginning to explore this as you're paying attention in your experience, beginning to explore that when you're meeting something that's challenging, and it is okay, it's like, oh, it's okay. Connecting with that okayness. It's okay, there's some balance of mind, there's some equanimity. Perhaps there's even the feeling of kindness towards the experience. This is one of the most helpful ways to begin to cultivate these beautiful qualities, to recognize when they're present. So often we just kind of gloss over them. Recognize when these beautiful qualities are coming up for you. And notice what gets in their way. It doesn't have to be a problem. Actually, this is very much the way through the things that are in the way. To be willing to meet those things with kindness. So we see impatience in the way of kindness. We see frustration in the way of kindness. Okay, can I be kind? Can I meet that frustration, impatience, with a kind attention? Another thing that's really helpful is to notice what are the things in your experience when you're experiencing these beautiful states, what are the conditions that support that? I'll just name a few that I've seen in my own experience that tend to support the possibility for the open heart. Not rushing. Leaving time. Not caught in thought, not being caught in my own whirlwind of thinking. Spending time with people who are kind. Not being afraid. So finding ways to support these conditions that lead us in the terrain of these qualities. And then I'll offer one last thing and open for just a couple questions because it's almost time to end. But practice simple acts of kindness. Just even really simple things like smiling at people you don't know. You know, this is pretty powerful. This was for a period of time, I did a walk at about the same time every day and ran across about the same people every day and began practicing this. And you know, at first, you know, the people were kind of looking away and looking down. And finally, I mean, I wasn't forcing myself on them or anything, but you know, I would just try to be kind and smile a little bit. And then I started getting smiles back. And at one point, it was so amazing that I got this one elderly man that he must have been in his 80s, and he was, you know, he had to walk kind of slowly and carefully, but when he smiled, it just lit up his whole face. You know, I would smile at him, and he would smile back, and I would get this burst of this quality of basically mudita, you know, of the resonance of happiness with happiness. And at one point, I decided to just see how long it would last. It was like 40 seconds. You know, it kind of faded slowly, but, you know, 40 seconds for a smile, 40 seconds of happiness for a smile, good payback. And so practice, think of ways to engage in simple acts of kindness. Explore that. So we have a couple minutes for a few thoughts, if there's anything.
Well, we enjoyed your lecture, Andrea.
Thank you.
Right, but
we could just sit for a minute. We just have a minute left, so let's just sit and I'll do a very short guided metta practice. So allowing yourself to connect with the area in your heart. Breathing in and out that area of your heart. Whatever you're feeling there is okay. And connecting to that feeling, whatever's happening there. Just allow yourself to drop in a few words of kindness to yourself, thoughts of goodwill directed to yourself. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I be safe. May I live with ease. And then turning outwards to all beings in the world. May all beings be happy. May all beings be healthy. May all beings be safe. May all beings live with ease. May all beings be free from suffering. Thank you for your attention.